Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for an intelligence briefing on what I think of as the war for the free world. When we talk about that war, it is often the case that we have to take into account what is happening at the hands of communist China in the Asian region and beyond. And when we do that, we are very pleased to be able to call upon our friend and colleague Gordon Chang, our duty expert on these matters, and also that of Forbes.com and WorldAffairsJournal.com. He's written two superb books on the region, North Korea Takes on the World and The Coming Collapse of Communist China. And Gordon, it's always important to visit with you, but rarely more so at the moment than at the moment when I think we're seeing on several different fronts, new evidence of China's ambitions. And I'd like to start with one that you talked about recently in a piece at Forbes.com that hasn't gotten the kind of attention it seems to me it deserves, namely China's internet giant, Alibaba, and the initial public offering that it is about to bring to the United States capital markets. Talk about your concerns about this transaction and what kinds of consequences it might have if they're not corrected.
Well, Alibaba is China's e-commerce giant. With about 80% of the e-commerce market in that country, it's going to have its initial public offering on the New York Stock Exchange probably on August 8th, and it could very well end up being the biggest IPO in history. There are a number of problems, though, because what we have is Jack Ma, the leading light behind Alibaba, has a very close relationship with the Chinese government and the Communist Party, and clearly he's doing a number of things that are of concern. One of them is that he's selling a structure to American investors that the Chinese Supreme Court has declared to be illegal, and that means U.S. investors could lose all or some of their investment in Alibaba. But Alibaba is not a very good investment from a number of different perspectives. One of them is that it's really topped out in China, and it's now moving into other areas in a very diffuse and unfocused way, which has really started to concern the investment analysts. So clearly we've got so many problems, not only from a legal, but also from a business point of view.
One of the other resources that we draw upon is an outfit called the U.S.-China Economic and Security Review Commission, Gordon, and it recently published a staff report that warned of the very structure of the sort of company that is proposing to sell its shares for tens of billions of dollars next month in Wall Street. Talk a little bit about this structure that they call the variable interest entity. How does it work, and what are its implications?
Well, U.S. investors are not allowed into the sector in which Alibaba does business in China. And so the investment community some time ago came up with what's called the variable interest entity structure, or VIE, which gets around it by sort of buying capital flows out of China as an alternative to actually owning the underlying business. This has been a problem because this follows another dodge, the China-China foreign structure, which was essentially the same thing in different clothing. Chinese companies used CCF structures in the 1990s. The Chinese government came in and ejected the foreign investors at great cost to them. And so clearly this is something that China has been doing in the past. It could very well do it this time as well. And Jack Ma has used the illegality of the own of the structure that he created, the VIE structure, to disadvantage Yahoo, which is a strategic investor in Alibaba. And he did this in 2010 to Yahoo's great disadvantage. So we know that Jack Ma is not sometimes willing to play very rough with his foreign investors, and I think he'll do so again.
Yeah, this is, I guess, the key concern. And as you said, Gordon, I guess this isn't just a hypothetical. The kind of behavior Jack Ma, the principal owner of Alibaba, has engaged in. Talk a little bit about what he did to Yahoo in connection with a subsidiary called Alipay.
Well, Alipay is sort of like PayPal, and it has about a 49% of China's third-party online market. What he did was, without telling Yahoo, which owned a very big portion of Alibaba at the time, he took Alipay out of Alibaba, and he basically ran it in a company which he, Jack Ma, owned himself. Clearly what happened is, he then said to Yahoo, when they found out about it, that this whole variable interest entity structure was illegal, and that the People's Bank of China, the central bank, forced him to do it. Well, I don't buy that for a minute. And clearly, when you now have this variable interest entity structure for all of Alibaba itself, you can see the same thing happening, only on a much bigger scale. Got to remember that Jack Ma, this is not his first IPO. He put his wholesale business, Alibaba.com, for sale on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange. He had a very bad experience. He had to buy back the shares from the public. It was so atrocious. So this is a guy who already has a track record of disadvantaging investors, both public investors in the stock market and also private ones like Yahoo.
You know, what's really striking to me, Gordon, about this Alibaba IPO is that in Hong Kong, they wouldn't allow it to be brought to market there. It really raises all kinds of red flags between the Cayman Islands cutouts, the inability to enforce contracts, the shell companies that are used, and then this predatory owner. It just seems to me this is something that the SEC or the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States or the Defense Department or somebody ought to be raising an alarm about, especially since, as we've not really had a chance to talk about, but on top of everything else, there is this concern about what it will mean to the privacy of American individuals and companies if they wind up using Alibaba. And it turns out it's a PLA, People's Liberation Army sandbox. I mean, for all these reasons, Gordon, I thank you for your terrific piece at Forbes.com on this. China's Alibaba and Tencent gobbling up everything in sight. Check it out, folks. Gordon, let me quickly turn to two other topics, if we have time. One is, what is China up to with South Korea? What does it signal for the North, and what might it mean for Japan as well?
Well, Xi Jinping, the Chinese ruler, just completed a two-day trip to Seoul. This got a lot of attention because it appears that China is trying to woo South Korea away from the United States. For instance, it is trying to get South Korea not to participate in a missile defense system with the U.S., which is really important, not only for South Korea, but also for the U.S. as well. Also, we can see many Chinese initiatives to essentially redraw the map of North Asia in ways that would advantage China and disadvantage the rest of the region, including the U.S. and Japan. So we have to be very concerned about what's going on here.
Well, we do indeed. And finally, Gordon, you've written a very sobering piece about what has happened of late in terms of Chinese-Taiwan relations. At the National Interest, you've talked about China's dangerous Taiwan gambit. Talk a little bit about what you think is in prospect there.
Well, in 2016, there's going to be a presidential election in Taiwan, and it looks like the Kuomintang, the ruling party right now, will lose to the Democratic Progressive Party, which is much more independence-minded. I'm very concerned that Beijing is going to try to absorb Taiwan before then, because the DPP would never allow that on its watch. And China has made some very aggressive statements about settling the Taiwan issue at this particular time. So this is something that is concerning, because Beijing could do all sorts of things while we're not watching.
Gordon, you actually put it that you anticipate they will move on Taiwan soon. Do you anticipate that that will mean forcible absorption? Is that what's in prospect as you see it?
Well, that's part of it, because China is increasing its short-range missiles across the Taiwan Strait, and it's configuring its military to take Taiwan. I'm concerned more about the political absorption, where China will make certain overtures that the Taiwan government will accept over the heads of the people in Taiwan. So you could have a combination of military threat plus political initiatives that could be very, very dangerous to the free world.
Gordon, next week we'll have to talk a bit about what's happening in Hong Kong at the moment, which is a vivid reminder of how China plays these games and intensifies inexorably the pressure to the point where, like a, I don't know, a boa constrictor, it strangles its victim. And I fear that that is in prospect for Taiwan, and all the more reason why we should be standing shoulder to shoulder with a democratic China there. Gordon, thank you so much for your superb contributions to our understanding of what's going on in Asia and through so many other outlets, including Forbes.com, WorldAffairsJournal.com, and, of course, Fox News. Keep it up, my friend. Come back to us next week. We'll look to talk with you then. Robin Simcox joins us from Henry Jackson Society next about the caliphate and what it means for you. Straight ahead.
Visit us at Facebook.com/SecureFreedom. With Frank Gaffney.
There's a reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people when you yell at them,
when you make fun of them,
when you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around. And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of
candor, intelligence, and goodwill
is because people can change your minds.
They're not going to change your minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
Are you looking to hire an IT specialist? Or a logistics expert? A medical technician? Or a security professional? Well, there are some very qualified candidates out there. America's wounded warriors. These men and women returning from battle are eager to get back to life at home and a good job. Some have wounds you can see, and some have wounds you can't see, like post-traumatic stress disorder. For these accomplished professionals, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps wounded warriors translate their military experience to the civilian workplace. These warriors have world-class job skills and a unique perspective on teamwork. And to ensure proper placement for each individual, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right candidate for the job. When your company is looking to hire talented, highly trained employees, contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home the brave.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Michael Medved says stupidity in our federal government is a bipartisan issue.
This administration and the leadership of Barack Obama
and the leadership of some folks in the Republican Party
are both so stupid and just so inane and brain dead. Can you see some kind of bright side here?
Stupid is, stupid does, sir.
The Michael Medved Show.
You want to help me with this?
Afternoons from 3 to 6 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by Robin Simcox. He is a research fellow at a splendid institution in the United Kingdom, the Henry Jackson Society, named for my old boss, Henry Scoop Jackson. He is a research fellow there, and he is a blogger at the World Affairs Journal. He contributes also mightily to Foreign Affairs Magazine and the Wall Street Journal, among other outlets. He is the co-author of Islamist Terrorism, The British Connections, and one of the go-to guys we have here, and others do as well, on matters involving things like the caliphate, the so-called new Islamic State that has just been declared by a jihadist by the name of al-Baghdadi, who turned up in the mosque in Mosul recently to pronounce that all Muslims should follow him. Robin Simcox, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you with us, especially on such a momentous occasion as this.
Great to be back with you, Frank.
So, what do we make of this Baghdadi character and the caliphate that he has declared?
Well, Baghdadi has hit the public consciousness quite a bit recently, but this is actually a guy with links to terrorism, links to al-Qaeda going back several years, and the original American invasion to overthrow Saddam Hussein. He's an individual that's become more and more powerful as the years gone by. He's now declared himself the caliph of the new caliphate. I mean, it's quite a clear power grab. And also there's been a fallout between ISIS and al-Qaeda recently. I think it should also be understood in those terms. Baghdadi basically saying, I can do what al-Qaeda always talked about doing but never could manage. I can control this territory. I can declare the caliphate. I can bring Muslims all around the world to join.
Join in my jihad. And Robin Simcox, this seems to be a rather remarkable statement, given that the man apparently commands just a few thousand active combatants. They've grabbed a lot of territory on both sides of the Syrian-Iraqi border, to be sure. But is there much there at the moment? And if so, is it a function of his ability to tap into some of those other Muslims besides those sworn directly to be loyal to him?
Definitely. I mean, he's been able to harness the support of certainly some of the Sunni tribes in Iraq, as well as, I think, loyalists, former loyalists, Saddam Hussein, who feel greatly rejected and let down by the Maliki government. But I also think we need to accept from our point of view that the reason why ISIS was allowed to regain its strength, one of the key reasons was the fact that US withdrew its troops from there when really it had ISIS or ISI, as it was known then, down and out. But President Obama was determined to get out of Iraq come hell or high water, no matter really what the security situation on the ground. And that's contributed to the rise of this jihadist group, which America had essentially defeated before, but now is on a big comeback.
Big comeback. It's liberated a lot of money, apparently. I've got a business model that I'm told is generating a lot more for it. It's picked up a lot of American weapons that were left in the hands of the Iraqi military when they abandoned their posts. It has been said, just for the purposes of sort of calibrating, you mentioned the falling out with al-Qaeda. It's been said by some who are putatively experts on these matters in the United States, Robin Simcox, that the al-Qaeda falling out was over the fact that ISIS was too violent for al-Qaeda's tastes. That doesn't seem possible to me, but what do you make of that?
Well, I think that the problem al-Qaeda has had with ISIS is that historically, the al-Qaeda, the Iraqi branch of al-Qaeda, has not listened to instruction from either bin Laden or Zawahiri. But this idea that ISIS and, you know, that if ISIS is more violent than al-Qaeda, then does that make al-Qaeda reasonable in some way? I mean, no, I think the way we should look at this is that no matter whether ISIS is more or less violent than al-Qaeda, that's all of a sudden a proliferation in hugely dangerous jihadi groups competing for influence in the region and competing to be the foremost terrorist threat. I mean, ISIS has now turned from essentially a terrorist group to a terrorist army in terms of the weapons it's produced. There's no good news really in this situation.
Yeah. My sense of it is that this is more like a sort of mafia war rather than something in which there are fundamental differences about either ideology, for sure, or for that matter, even the violent tactics. And let me ask you about, speaking of the ideology, the status of ISIS or the Islamic State or the Caliphate, as you will, with respect to some of the influential clerics in the region. And I'm thinking notably of Yusuf al-Qaradawi and Abu Muhammad al-Maqdisi.
Well, so far, Qaradawi and Maqdisi have both spoken out against this new caliphate. At the moment, I mean, there's still a lot of other jihadi theologians who haven't said anything, but at the moment, the ones who have spoken out have been vaguely critical of it. But I think it's probably important to bear in mind, first of all, people like Maqdisi and Qaradawi, they see the caliphate as the end goal. They just at the moment disagree whether ISIS is the best way of achieving it. And second of all, from ISIS's point of view, from Baghdadi's point of view, I think it would be, from his point of view, it would be useful if he had theological backing from people like Qaradawi. But essentially, does it matter to him? I'd say probably not. I mean, he's going to get people coming to the caliphate in numbers. We don't know how many yet, but they're going to come regardless because of the attraction of ISIS, the fact that ISIS is a flourishing group at the moment. I mean, basically, if we're relying on people like Qaradawi and Maqdisi to be our best weapon in this fight, then we're in a lot of trouble.
That's for sure. We've been relying on Qaradawi altogether too much, it seems to me, on a lot of different scores, but this would be a particularly serious mistake. As you say, this is kind of a strong horse phenomenon, and if these guys continue to succeed in taking ground and slaying enemies of Allah, as they describe them, I suspect you'll be proven absolutely right that they will be very much a coming force. Let me ask you what this means for the West, Robin Simcox, in your estimation. Many have said that this is not something that will be confined to the Middle East, even if that's immediately where it's operating. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, I've been speaking to officials for years on this, on the threat emanating from Iraq, even in the years prior to and just after the U.S. withdrawal, when I was assured governments were with a lot of Iraq fatigue, both in Washington and London, were saying, look, this is just going to be a purely Iraqi threat. We don't need to worry about it. Then it became a purely regional threat. And I think with the ties to some of the plots already, for example, in a recent article for Foreign Affairs, I outlined some of the threats to the West that ISIS have been responsible for in the past, including a suicide bombing in Sweden back in 2010. This is a group with and a leader who has shown himself to be extremely ambitious, extremely violent, and extremely keen on creating his own legacy and getting more power. It would be so naive and so willfully, blindly optimistic to assume that this is a problem that can solely be restrained and contained within the Middle East. It's a problem for us all, and I think it's time that Western governments began to wake up to that.
And Robin Simcox, very quickly, we have less than a minute. What would you recommend they do once they've awakened to this threat from the Islamic State?
Well, look, I mean, the problem is here that all our intelligence gathering capabilities, which we had in Iraq, have kind of been dismantled after 2011 because the US was so keen to withdraw quickly. But if we can begin to rebuild some of those intelligence capabilities, if we can get the good information on where Baghdadi and his inner circle are based, then I think there can be a role for American aerial power here, be it in the form of drones most likely. Because I've got to tell you, if America doesn't get involved, other countries aren't going to be as reticent. Iran's going to be a big player, and an even bigger player in Iraq, and America is going to be factored out, and I don't want that to happen.
Don't want that to happen either. Robin Simcox, we appreciate the work you do at the Henry Jackson Society, and indeed the work of that organization more generally. It's absolutely indispensable. Keep it up. Come back to us again, if you would, very soon. Next up, Joel Brenner, former senior intelligence officer in the United States government. We'll talk about the NSA, privacy, and counterintelligence. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Last night, Israel launched a military assault on targets in the Gaza Strip controlled by the designated terrorist group Hamas. The Jewish state has thus far exercised considerable restraint in retaliating for 450 Hamas missile strikes over the past 6 months, some of which have inflicted casualties and damage in two major Israeli cities, Ashkelon and Ashdod. Representative Michelle Bachmann recently observed that the problem is not just Hamas. It is also Fatah, the Palestinian faction that has fraudulently been described as a partner for peace with Israel, but that is as committed as Hamas to the destruction of the Jewish state. Ms. Bachmann is right. We must understand the nature of our jihadist enemies if we, the Israelis, and other freedom-loving people are ever to prevail over them. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement? And how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, wherever the mission takes us, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for our nation, for us all. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. It is with the greatest of pleasure that I welcome once again to this microphone Carolyn Glick, senior fellow with the David Horowitz Freedom Center, where she runs its Israel Security Project. She is also a fellow with the Center for Security Policy. I'm very pleased to say she is a columnist with the Jerusalem Post and a best-selling author several times over, including most recently with The Israeli Solution, a one-state plan for peace in the Middle East. Carolyn Glick, welcome. It's always good to have you with us.
It's always a pleasure to be on your show, Frank.
Thank you. Well, let's talk a little bit about what's happening in your homeland, in Israel at the moment. Is what we are seeing developing at the moment, Carolyn, in your judgment, the third intifada?
Intifada, as we understand, is a Palestinian terrorist war against Israel. And I would argue that it's been going on for quite some time. And the low-intensity conflict in the West Bank, we thought, with shooting attacks and stonings of Israeli vehicles, most recently in the kidnapping and murder of three Israeli high school boys, and we've been seeing it for a while. What we see now is a vast escalation of that, and all of the relevant parties, Hamas and Fatah, are gunning to take over what started a couple of days ago or last week has been a lot of rioting among Israeli Arabs throughout the country. And so we have a very, very dangerous situation. Gaza is trying to take it over by launching a war against Israel. We've seen that over the past 3 weeks, they've launched 150 rockets and mortars at Israel. Last night, they increased the range of the mortars and missiles, causing air raid sirens to go off in the outskirts of Jerusalem already, which is 70 kilometers away from Gaza. So we see an escalation in the Gaza Strip to try to co-opt and lead this insurrection, or turn the riots of the Israeli Arabs into a into an organized insurrection. And on the West Bank, and the Judean Samaria Fatah is the other warring faction for Palestinian leadership and presumptive partner in the Palestinian Unity Government, which we can talk about, has been putting out just unbelievable incendiary material, calling for the Zionists to prepare body bags because we're going to have untold numbers of bodies to put into them. Really just genocidal incitement that's coming out of Fatah.
It really does boggle the mind. And as you say, Carolyn, this has been going on for years. It's been going on with respect to Hamas and its efforts to wage mostly low-intensity war against Israel. It's been going on with Fatah and the kind of incitement that's been taking place. We now have this so-called unity government bringing together these two factions, and the Obama administration is insistent that it is going to continue, notwithstanding the law, to support financially, the Palestinian Authority. Talk about the implications of that for Israel and for our interests as well.
Well, I mean, what the United States is doing, what the Obama administration is doing, is openly breaking U.S. law, statute, not just the spirit of the law, but the letter of the law that prohibits any support whatsoever to a foreign terrorist organization. And Hamas is duly designated by the State Department as a foreign terrorist organization. He's a member in the Palestinian Unity Government, which the State Department really crazily insists on referring to as a technocratic government, whatever that means. It just means that you have a bunch of figureheads who get their marching order from terror masters and insisting that the United States has to keep funding it, when what that means is that the United States is openly in breach of U.S. law and is committing a felony by continuing to transfer these funds. They are in breach of U.S. counterterrorist statutes.
Let's just broaden the lens a little bit, Carolyn. In addition to the two factions that you've mentioned, Fatah, Mahmoud Abbas's Palestinian Liberation Organization terrorist outfit, and Hamas, a designated terrorist organization, we also apparently have now, beginning to operate in the Palestinian community, this group, the Islamic State, or ISIS. What do you make of that prospect, and how should that affect how Israel conducts itself at this point?
The most ideal situation would have been allowed to let the chips fall where they may in Gaza, because what we've had in Gaza over the past month and a half or 2 months is warfare going on between Hamas on the one hand and Al-Qaeda affiliates in Gaza, and Islamic Jihad affiliate, which is run by Iran in Gaza. And so they were killing one another at a low level of conflict, but their involvement in a power struggle that was becoming violent. And actually, I think that part of the reason that Hamas has decided to escalate and go into a full-fledged confrontation with Israel right now is because it wants to rally the public behind it by making war against the Jews, which is a cause that everybody is unified in supporting and wanting to participate in. But we do have a problem with ISIS. The Egyptians have a problem with them in the Sinai Peninsula. We have a problem with them in Gaza. The Jordanians are increasingly having a problem with them due to the mass refugee flows of 2 million people into Jordan from Syria and Iraq. And so ISIS is becoming more of a threat on the outskirts of Israel. And also, of course, Al-Qaeda cells, ISIS cells, operating along the Israeli-Syrian border, which is now 85% under the control of ISIS and other Al-Qaeda affiliates.
Carolyn Glick is our guest. She is the author, most recently, of The Israeli Solution, a one-state plan for peace in the Middle East. And Carolyn, this picture that you've just painted of an Israel surrounded by hostile forces and becoming more aggressively so, obviously is extraordinarily worrying. What is it that the United States could most usefully do at this moment to support our most important ally in the region, and to prevent the kind of danger that it's facing from metastasizing further, including towards us?
You know, I think right now what everybody has to operate under is a sure bet strategy. There's so many uncertainties in the region that what people have to do is start just putting their chips on things that they know are going to win games, instead of gambling and trying to pick and choose between jihadist organizations that the United States has proved itself again and again to be incapable of discerning the differences between. And to that end, I think that what the United States has to do regarding Israel and the Palestinians is to simply side with Israel against the Palestinians and accept that the two-state paradigm has failed, and push and support Israeli efforts to simply apply Israeli law to Judea and Samaria, to the West Bank, and to integrate to the extent possible the Palestinians of those areas into Israeli society. And we see, interestingly, even as you have Israeli Arabs who are rioting against Israel and really carrying out pogrom-like violence against Israeli Jews, firebombing Jewish vehicles, attempting to lynch Jewish families, tearing Jewish drivers out of their cars on highways and beating them. Even as you see this, what you're also seeing is something that we didn't see when previous riots took place in 2000, which is that you have, for the first time that we've seen in recent years, Arab leaders who are coming out and opposing the riots. And this is indicative of a wider trend going on among Israeli Arabs towards integration in Israel. And we have to encourage this as a national strategy and enable the people who want to be part of Israel, facilitate their efforts and empower them while enforcing the full force of the law against those who seek, who commit treason and who in any way abet violence or treason against Israel among the Israeli Arabs. And I think that that can be a model that Israel can follow as well in Judea and Samaria. But we have to get rid of these terrorist actors, these terrorist governments, whether it's led by Fatah, which the United States wrongly and for only political reasons insists is not a terrorist organization, even though it is clearly a terrorist organization and abides by all three categorizations of a foreign terrorist organization under U.S. statute, and the United States, and the same with Hamas.
Carolyn Glick, thank you so much for your time today, as always, and for the extraordinary contributions you make to the security of the Jewish state and I think to that of the free world. Keep it up. Come back to us again very soon. Next up, Andy McCarthy joins us to talk about how not to indict a terrorist, the Abu Qatala affair. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook on Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country
and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
I had no choice the news that was given to me on August 2nd.
Gold Star mom, Debbie Lee.
But I did have a choice how I responded.
In August 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
I chose to put on Mark's boots, pick up his weapon, and stay in the fight for our troops and their families.
And America's Mighty Warriors was born.
Mark's name meant Mighty Warrior. And he definitely lived up to his name.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org, you'll find Mark's last letter home.
Read it, and you'll know what AMW's about.
It's about service to active duty members of the military and their families.
Including care packages, visits, and more.
It's about supporting the wounded and the people who love them.
It's about the Gold Star family.
Special retreats, concerts, Mother's and Father's Day events to let them know they're loved and not forgotten. Donations are tax deductible and go directly where they're needed.
Read Mark's last letter home.
And just as he inspired his mom, let Mark inspire you to some random acts of kindness of your own.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Well, the moment has arrived. I call it the high point of my week, and I'm sure of yours as well. It's where we get to visit with our friend Andy McCarthy, former federal prosecutor, now pundit at National Review Online and PJ Media, and best-selling author, including most recently, of Faithless Execution, making the political case for Obama's impeachment. Andy McCarthy, welcome back. It's always good to have you with us.
Thanks, Frank. Thanks for having me.
Well, this is what they call a target-rich environment. I don't know where to begin, but let's start with your analysis of the indictment of this chap Abu Qatala, a jihadist who was just snatched in Benghazi after, oh, I don't know, 2 years of living the high life with American journalists, among others.
I can't help but think that the indictment of Katala, Frank, rather than being what it's been represented as, which is bringing a terrorist to justice, is actually a bit of theater that's designed mainly to protect the president and his administration in what I think was a catastrophic policy failure that led to the Benghazi massacre. Obviously, no one is principally responsible for a terrorist attack other than the terrorists who carry it out. However, everyone who's looked at this, I think, has said after, you know, the sensible reviews anyway, that this was a preventable attack. And the reason it happened, and the reason it was allowed to happen, is because of a policy on the part of the president to embrace and empower Islamists in the hope that that having the responsibilities of governance would somehow tame and moderate them. You know, the predictable result of the reckless failure to provide security for that facility in Benghazi and to have people mysteriously assigned there was the massacre that occurred on September 11th.
Yeah. And Andy, the Katala indictment, as I understand it, basically reduces the charge on which this guy is going to be prosecuted to simply material support for terrorism. This is something, of course, the administration has been sort of lowballing in recent years, notably as a as an impediment to people coming to this country. Assuming that they've got the goods on this guy, what does it mean in terms of the kind of sentence that he will serve, in your estimation?
Well, Frank, you know, I think, first of all, let's just parse it a bit, because what you raise is very important. This has been widely reported as a terrorism conspiracy indictment, and that really isn't accurate. It does charge conspiracy, but it is not conspiracy to make war against the United States or conspiracy to kill Americans. It's a conspiracy on Katala's part with unnamed Confederates to lend material support to terrorists. So, in effect, Katala himself is not even accused of being a terrorist in the indictment, even though the State Department has identified him as a senior leader of the Al-Qaeda offshoot in Benghazi, and even though the way that this has been framed for the public, which, you know, can't be expected, I think, to parse legal documents, is that this is a guy who's being brought to justice for a terrorism conspiracy. But in point of fact, it's not a conspiracy of the kind that we've seen in terrorism indictments. The administration has been down on material support from the beginning, not only in terms of trying to loosen up material support laws and create subcategories of minimal material support or whatever they call it in order to let people into the country who shouldn't be here, but also they've complained that it's an impediment to Muslims who want to make their charitable obligation under Islamic law. The president has an interesting history with material support, but I think in this instance, it's a very curious choice to charge in the indictment. And then when you look a little harder, the conspiracy that we're talking about, which is just basically Katala lending himself as personnel to unidentified terrorists who are not identified as being part of Al-Qaeda or Ansar al-Sharia or any of the other known factions. There.
For a very short period of time.
Yes, one day and perhaps just a few hours.
It's like rent a terrorist.
Sometime on September 11th till sometime on September 12th, basically, is what it says in the indictment. So the charge tracks the administration's story of a spontaneous protest in which there were these elusive terrorists who were hanging around, and you had somebody like Katala who, you know, was swept up in it and decided to join with the terrorist who might be about to carry out an attack on the United States. So it's kind of pled in a way that dovetails with the administration's political version of events. And in terms of what you asked me about the sentence, because people were killed, Katala is looking at the possibility of life imprisonment. Ordinarily, depending on how you charge a material support crime, it could be a 15 or 30-year prison maximum. But here, because death resulted, it could be a life imprisonment offense. But interestingly, if he had been charged with a standard terrorism conspiracy, the death penalty would be on the table, and it's not in this case.
Well, you'll be following it closely and explaining it for the rest of us, I'm sure, Andy, and I hope justice will be served. But it does seem to me that if you don't start with the actual nature of the crime and all of the context that is necessary to understand it, that seems unlikely. Let me turn quickly, Andy, to the subject of your latest book, Faithless Execution, namely lawlessness on the part of the Obama administration, starting with the president himself, as you've amply demonstrated in that superb work. You have called for an example to be made, I guess I would call it, of the IRS commissioner, who is also eligible for impeachment in connection with the seeming destruction of evidence that had been, called for by the Congress. What is the likelihood that we will see Congress acting in such a fashion? And might it have a salutary effect on the behavior of the administration more generally, were they to engage in such an exercise?
I think that if you have executive branch officials who have committed impeachable offenses, they ought to be impeached. And, you know, as we've discussed before, the political support to impeach the president is obviously not there. But if the public doesn't have the same attachment to essentially appointed bureaucrats who it never elected and who it really doesn't know other than their connection to scandal, and particularly if they've been attached to a organization like the IRS, which in the best of times is not a popular government agency. And I think that the salutary effect of that is that the framers really gave us only a couple of ways of checking executive lawlessness, and impeachment is one of them, and they thought it was an indispensable one. And if you never use it, then it's an illusory one. And it kind of communicates to rogues in the executive branch that they can conduct themselves roguishly with impunity. So I think it would be a good thing to go after executive branch officials. I don't know if Koskinen is complicit in the destruction of evidence. I do know his testimony has been very troubling, and that's certainly something I'd be looking very hard at. But you know, he's only one candidate in a sea of people in the executive branch who've been involved in some pretty funky stuff.
Andy, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it at that. We didn't get to what I was hoping we would also talk about. You have pointed out that instead of using either the power of the purse or impeachment as correctives to this kind of misconduct by the government of Barack Obama, the Speaker of the House has decided he's going to sue him over his lawlessness. And I know you've got an entire riff on why that's a bad idea, so we look forward to visiting with you about that next week. For the moment, thank you for the great work you do at National Review and at PJ Media and in so many other places, including notably with this incredibly important new book, Faithless Execution, Making the Political Case for the Impeachment of Obama. Keep up that great work. Come back to us again next week, Andy, and I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.